I'm Vermont Edition co-host Bob Kinzel. Just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The Vermont Health Department recently released data on opioid overdose deaths for last year. 107. That's one more than in 2016. But there's some cause for cautious optimism, even in that grim statistic. An increase of one might suggest that at least the surge is slowing. Now, whether that has to do with the availability of overdose reversal drugs or signs that treatment and possibly even prevention are starting to take hold is a little harder to determine. But certainly most everyone agrees that educating young people on the dangers of drugs, particularly opioids, is key. So what's the best approach to dealing with drug prevention and education in our schools? Today on the show, we're going to talk to people in several different places around the state where organizations are working on getting the message right with students and kids in Vermont. First, let's talk with Jesse Brooks, Regional Prevention Partnership Coordinator for the United Way of Addison County. Hello, Jesse.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about HELP? This is a program that you helped to start and run in Addison County.
Yeah, absolutely. So HELP, because we're in the land of organizations, we love acronyms. So that stands for Heroin Epidemic Learning Program. And it began with a gentleman by the name of Jeremy Holm, who is a Virgins community member, and he's also a TV film actor. Jeremy was friends with the late Philip Seymour Hoffman, who passed away from a heroin overdose. Not too long after that, he was listening to actually an NPR interview with the chief of police out of Liverpool, Ohio. He was the gentleman that took the photo of the couple that had passed out in the front seat of a car with the toddler strapped in the back. Mm-hmm. And that chief of police said, in the interview, he was asked why he did it. And he said, well, we need help. We need people to understand that this is not something that we can arrest our way out of. And we don't have enough funding and manpower to tackle the epidemic on our own. And later in the interview, he was asked if he had unlimited amount of funding and unlimited manpower, what would he do? And he said that he would target youth with prevention. And that stuck with Jeremy that day. And Jeremy has two little girls, and he was thinking about how he needed to educate his girls and not stop with just them, with their friends and their classmates. And so we got connected one day, sat down at a coffee shop in October of 2016 and talked about what we wanted to do. And we knew that we wanted to target youth, and we knew that it needed to be about the opioid epidemic. And because of Jeremy's background, we wanted it to be focused on film. So we decided that it would be PSAs, or public service announcements. And we also knew that we weren't experts, so we needed to bring in people from the community to come in and educate the students. So we talked about who we wanted to bring in, and we mentioned law enforcement. We talked about wanting a medical perspective. We wanted somebody who was in recovery or currently using. And we wanted somebody, especially keeping that photo in mind from Liverpool, Ohio, we wanted the toddler in the back perspective. We wanted somebody who had grown up living in that situation. And so really when we thought about this, we had a 3 to 5 year plan of implementing this program. And we went into high schools to get some more feedback from them because we wanted to build it into their curriculum. And we sat down with several high schools in Addison County, and they said, great, you want to start next month. And I've been in business long enough where I know the answer to that question is never no.
Right.
You always say yes. And so then it became a bit of a rat race to try to find our what we call expert volunteers to come in and present to youth. But we had a program in a month and a half about.
Well, let me ask you a little bit about the program, because you mentioned that you coordinate with other kinds of people, including law enforcement. And we're going to speak with a Vermont State Police sergeant in just a few moments. But you also, you said, have kids make their own PSAs. So what's the thinking behind having kids not just sit and listen to lectures, even if they're very, eye-opening and perhaps hit them right where it counts? But what's the idea behind making kids do this themselves for their peers?
Yeah, I first want to say that it's it's really not lectures, it's discussions. So we really open it up. We bring in these volunteer experts, but we open it up for discussion. And when we bring them in, we tell students that they can have any conversation that they want with these folks as long as they're respectful. Mm-hmm. So it's really honest and it's uncensored content. And it's a mix of stories and data. But as far as the PSAs are concerned, we also support students with film experts. So we bring in, we have Jeremy, of course, who's a TV film actor, but we also bring in a storyboard professional, and he works with the students on storyboard writing, and we bring in a professional film editor. And the students actually film their own PSAs, and they do it with many of them do it with their iPhones. When I was 13, I was not nearly as tech-savvy as some of these kids are, most of these kids are, I should say, and most of them can create low-budget films on their phone without this program, but we give them some additional tools to really clean it up. So they create their own PSAs. They film them. They film them on their own. They provide their own props. They use their own resources, and we connect them with community members and resources throughout the program. But they do all the planning and filming themselves.
Yeah, what I'm getting at is there must be some thinking behind that idea that if they do it themselves, the message is more likely to stick, or that, you know, hearing it from other peers is more likely to get the message across in a way that resonates. Because otherwise, I mean, it sounds very cool, and you're giving them some skills for perhaps career development, but there must be some thinking behind it that, like, this is an approach that works because peer-to-peer is how kids learn.
Yeah, absolutely. I think empowering students is the biggest piece of this program. You know, feeling like they're making a difference in their community, the community that they're going to school in and that they, some of them work in, and that they you know, have their families in. They're the ones that are determining what the message is, what resonated with them in the program, the content that stuck out to them the most, the presenter that stuck out to them the most, the perspective. They're determining their prevention message. And I think that's important because, you know, they're our future. So they're the ones that, you know, we always tell them, if you don't start, we don't ever have to stop you. So what do we have to tell you? Who do we have to bring in that's going to make that, you know, as clear as we can? And I think, you know, it's a combination of, like I said, these stories that these folks bring in, but, you know, it's also the data. Mm-hmm. We love to weave in science because, you know, kids can access any information that they want to.
Right.
Whether it's on their phones or their laptops or wherever, and some of it's accurate and some of it's not so accurate. So we try to give them as much education as we can, and we really focus on the science of it too, just as much as the stories, so that it can't be denied that this is that, you know, opioids are a problem and that they impair you and they go into your body and they react a certain way.
Jesse, you know that firsthand. You have some experience in understanding how devastating drug abuse can be to a family. Would you mind sharing a little bit of your personal story and why you come to this with such passion?
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, we bring in volunteer experts. I'm one of the experts that comes in. I essentially was the toddler in the back seat of that car. I grew up with a parent that struggled with substance use disorder, specific to opiates. It was something that I struggled with in the heart of my teen years, which is why I think I can connect with these students in a much different way. I know how it feels. I know the emotional struggles that these students are feeling. And many of them have stories that are very similar to mine. This has been just as much of an educational and emotional journey for me as it is for the students. I've done a lot of self-reflecting because of this program, but I think it's really important. I think the vulnerability is a really important part of this program. I recently, in my presentation, I do what's called this exercise where we go around the room and we say something that surprises people to learn about them. And it's really to get the conversation going of assumptions and judgments. And I have students go around twice. And so when I first did this exercise, it was like pulling teeth. Like the kids were going around and saying, well, you'd be surprised to learn that I have a sister. You'd be surprised to learn that I'm nice, things like that. And so when it got to me, I said, you know, you'd be surprised to learn that I can do pop singer impressions. And that got the students really riled up. They wanted to hear the impressions. And I said, well, we're going to go around one more time. And if you give me some good answers, I'll do some impressions. And the first kid goes and says, you'd be surprised to learn that I've had three parents die of suicide. Or not parents, excuse me, family members die of suicide. The next kid went, you'd be surprised to learn that I had difficulty attending elementary school because I was severely bullied. The next kid went, you'd be surprised to learn that the father I've known all my life is not my biological father, and I just found this out. So when I walk away from these classes some days, and my mind is completely blown. Like, we designed this program to be about opioid prevention. And there's also so many things that are happening beyond that. The connection with students, to the community members and the resources, and like I said, the vulnerability and education. There's so many things that are happening beyond this that I think we never planned to happen, but are really good things that are developing from it.
Well, I appreciate you telling us a little bit about it and prompting this discussion. Jesse Brooks is Regional Prevention Partnership Coordinator for United Way of Addison County, which runs the HELP program along with others. Jesse, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're talking about drug prevention education today. When I was a kid, it was the DARE program, Drug Abuse Prevention Education. What kind of education did you get in your school or after school setting, and did it work? How different is your experience from what you see kids getting today, maybe your kids, in terms of drug prevention and education? Matt Daly is a Vermont State Police Sergeant who works in schools on this kind of prevention and education piece of the drug puzzle. He works, in fact, on the HELP program, and we have him on the phone now. Hello, Sergeant Daly. Nice to talk with you.
Thanks for having me.
So you work in coordination with this program we were just discussing with Jesse Brooks. How do you tackle this with kids without sort of coming across as the long arm of the law or this just enforcement perspective on drugs?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to be honest with kids, and what we try to do is give them a clear picture of the overall, the far-reaching aspects of this drug and what it can do to them and what it can do to their family members and society, and just try to give them a view of what we see, the different aspects of it being with not only destroying your body, but also destroying relationships with people that they love, and you know, the petty crimes and everything that kind of goes with it. So you obviously can't talk down to them because the kids are pretty smart, and you just try to give them a real life view of what it is. And it's, you know, we don't really put a filter on it. We tell them our experiences of walking into houses and what we see and the garbage piled up and just the different aspects that, you know, on a normal day to day, they're not going to see by just going to school and doing these things. So I think that's really the message that we try to get across through going in and talking with these kids.
Can you give me an example of some of the things that you've seen and things that you pass on to these young people?
Yep. A lot of it is, you know, people who overdose in cars and back of, you know, and we're local too. So these kids know these areas when we talk about 7 and 17 store, and we're talking about a certain gas station that they probably pass by almost every day, and we're having to go there and revive people with Narcan and things like that. We tell stories of, you know, an 11-year-old kid that, you know, his dad was overdosing, and he didn't have cell coverage at the house, so he had to go out, walk down the road a few miles, call, and then comes back, and when he comes back, dad is back, you know, had come to, and starts yelling at the kid, and why did you do this, and those sorts of things, I think, resonate with the kids, and we're like, look, you know, this kid did the right thing by doing this, and this is the reaction he's getting, and it's really not how I think this parent wants to act, but it's, you know, how this drug has really affected their life and gripped their life, and that's the reality of what's going to happen.
When you talk to these kids, not only are they aware of, you know, for example, that gas station, or the places that you're talking about, some of these children and young people have experience with family members who have addiction or have experienced the same type of thing that you're talking about. And I know you're sensitive to that. So how do you approach your work in schools with the knowledge that kids are already affected by these things?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, we go into it and we talk prior to and just say, listen, we're going to give you an unfiltered view of what we see, and we're not judging anybody. And people who nobody's who I have ever interviewed that's been addicted to heroin is like, this is how I want my life, you know. And they're not bad people. They've made extremely bad choices, and they continue to make those bad choices because of the drug and things like that. So we kind of reiterate that throughout the talks when we're in the schools and stuff like that. And schools have their own policies where, you know, if it gets a little too – hits too close to home for some of these kids, because some of these kids are basically hearing it in school from us and then going back to their house and living it, you know, and we're describing their home life. So if they need to take a break, they can take a break. But, you know, the majority of the kids are very attentive, and we've had some very good conversations with these kids and back and forth in school. So, you know, we're not trying to come across as offensive, but, you know, the kids receive it relatively well.
What's your assessment of how you know if it's working? You know, how you know if you're having any effect? I mean, obviously, it's a long tail, but how do you know that what you're doing is effective?
Right. It's a good question. I think this is a pretty big hole that we've dug with this sort of thing, and it's not going to – the help program isn't going to solve this in 2 years, and it's not going to be a five-year thing. And, you know, the way – I talked to Jesse about it is, you know, you kind of look at it as like the cigarette. You know, when I was growing up, like cigarettes were, we were told cigarettes were bad, and they had this huge campaign, and, you know, 30 years have gone by and people are still doing them, but they're not in the public eye as much, and it's not seen as a good thing to do. And that's where we want to get, you know, programs like HELP into schools to make this, not the norm, and not have kids having to go back to these houses that are doing this. So we're concentrating on opiates in these classes, but I think the real thing is to get these kids to think critically. Like, you know, here's the consequences that are going to happen, and if you continue to do this or you go down this road, this is likely going to happen to you. So the thought is to have them know that they're going to be at a party, know that at some point in their life these – it's going to be offered to them, whether it's in pill form or a bag of heroin. And, you know, maybe something they seen in our class or somewhere else, you know, makes them pause, and maybe they don't do it that day, you know, and they rethink their decision. So I think that's a lot of – we talk about decision-making and making good decisions and just educating yourself on, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So.
That's Matt Daly, a Vermont State Police Sergeant. Sergeant Daly, thank you for talking to us a little bit about your approach to drug education and prevention in schools. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
We certainly can't hit all the programs and places around the state where people are trying innovative or different approaches to try to prevent future substance abuse. But today on Vermont Edition, we're getting sort of a representative sampling. Kenneth Schaefer, a deputy with the Orange County Sheriff's Department, says, I'm one of the only three LEAD instructors. LEAD stands for Law Enforcement Against Drugs, and we go into our local schools talking to the children about the effects drug use can have on their growing bodies and brains. LEAD is an evidence-based skill-building program that makes a positive impact on the lives of students, teachers, parents, and their community leaders. We also talk to children about alcohol, tobacco, prescription drug use, and now, with the recent legalization, marijuana. We talk about how they can learn to make good, healthy decisions and how to make and keep strong and healthy friendships. If you're an adult of a certain age, you might have participated in the DARE program as a child, or you might remember the Just Say No campaign and the This Is Your Brain on Drugs ads with the egg in the frying pan. Most people agree that spreading the word about the dangers of substance use and abuse has to start young. But the methods and the specific drugs that are being targeted change with time. We're looking at what's happening in Vermont today around drug abuse education. Marianne Morris joins us now. She's executive director of something called The Collaborative, a Southern Vermont community-based drug-free space and program for kids and teenagers. Hello, Marianne.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me on.
So the collaborative goes beyond just being in schools and offering a curriculum in the classroom. What do you do?
So we try to work with our young people during the hours outside of school time, as well as doing a couple of things within the school day. One of the ways that we access young people at their youngest stages is by providing an after-school space for kindergarten through sixth grade, and then a middle school hangout space for seventh and eighth graders that's in the school that we have our offices at. By accessing the young kids for a fun time for after school and to support their homeworking time, we also are able to send prevention messages and drug education messages home to families so that it starts those conversations at a really young age.
How do you make it cool enough so that the kids want to be there and want to participate and aren't like, oh gosh, that's the place where they're going to tell you don't do drugs?
Sure. So we don't make that as our primary focus during that particular after-school time. We maybe have some soft sell messages where we've got some posters on the walls, or we're engaging in some good conversation with the young people. When we want to do something with intent with middle schoolers and up, we host student empowerment groups, which in those groups we want to encourage the students who are participating to pick the thing that they're passionate about and give it a voice. So they're building that skill of being able to speak their mind, speak up for what they believe in, and maybe they pick substances that they want to educate their peers around substance use and the hazards, the health hazards, or the other risks of substance use. Or maybe it's something else entirely, but they're still learning that skill and feeling valued for their voice, which goes a really long way towards building assets in a young person. Also, you know, in one of the places where our office is, you know, we have a foosball table. We use our AmeriCorps members who are young people just out of college so that it doesn't look like me as an old person shaking my finger at them and telling them to do things. We try to give it that younger voice.
You also have other kinds of incentives, like a season pass to a ski resort and things like that.
Sure. That's one of our programs specifically called the Refuse to Use program, and we're in nine schools with that program for middle school through high schoolers. And that program pairs education. They're required to go to five outside of school time educational programs, an hour and a half long each. Two of those programs, their parents are required to come with them to. So we're getting that parent-child connection with the education and increasing communication, because we think that that's a really vital part. Parents are the number one influence in whether their whether their child chooses to use drugs or alcohol. And in as a reward for that, because, you know, we all need a reward sometimes for doing the right thing, as a reward for that or as the incentives, they are provided with a season pass to either Stratton Mountain Resort, which that's a really big donation by them, Riley Rink, another big donation, that's an ice skating rink locally, or the Viking Nordic Center, another choice. What these things have in common is that they're all healthy behaviors, lifelong healthy behaviors that they're being encouraged to engage in so that they have an alternative to substance use.
How do you reach the kids whose family members don't enroll them or don't know about the program, or perhaps some of the young people who may be most vulnerable and maybe most need this kind of help and support and mentorship?
Yeah, that's it's a hard thing, and we grapple with that all the time. The Refuse to Use program is a volunteer program. We try to encourage everybody to apply to be in the program, but we also partner with schools to come into their school day and support their health education program. Again, we use our AmeriCorps. It's that nice face of a younger person, a different perspective. It's not their teacher. And in a fun way, we try to educate around the harms or the truth around different substances. You know, just the other day, you know, it's not on par with an opioid program, but it was Kick Butts Day. So we were in a school and they were doing round robin activities around tobacco education and vaping education. And so one of the activities was tobacco jeopardy, and another one was more like a relay race. So we were trying to make it more fun and engaging, And by partnering with the schools, we know that we're accessing all of those people. We also do substance-free events, so those are open to anybody. Whether it's a dance or a night at the ice skating rink where we're showing a teenage movie, we're just providing that space where they know that they've got a place to go that might not necessarily, where they might not have to make the choice about, am I going to take that drink? Am I going to do that drug?
Marianne Morris is Executive Director of the Collaborative in Southern Vermont. Thank you so much for telling us a little bit about it, Marianne.
Thank you.
We're looking at drug prevention and education in Vermont schools and communities today. You can post your note on the VPR Facebook page. Krista is calling in from Jericho. Hi, Krista. Go right ahead.
Hi. Yes, I was wondering if a conversation about relationships and having someone to confide in was going to be discussed. To kind of give a quick overview, between the ages of 16 and 21, I had three extremely traumatic deaths, and I didn't have anybody that I could talk to. My friends, they didn't understand my. Wasn't in communication with my mother, and my father was one of the people who had died. And so I felt very, very alone, and I really started going down a slippery slope. And luckily, I met someone in my early 20s, early to mid-20s, who actually asked me how I was doing, and I couldn't really give him an honest answer. You know, I think it's really important for people, kids, teenagers, adults, to feel like they have someone that they can confide in, because when you're alone and you feel alone, then, and you're holding in a bunch of stuff, it's very easy to head towards something that's going to numb that pain.
So, Krista, would something like what Marianne Morris was just telling us about with the Collaborative, where there are, you know, young people in their 20s, AmeriCorps volunteers who are hanging out with these younger kids and available as near-peer mentors, would that be something that you think might be effective?
Definitely. I mean, as long as, you know, people feel like they're safe to have these conversations and actually, you know, the person who's there to help make sure that they're actually fully engaged, you know, because there's a lot of people who ask how you're doing, but, you know, you can tell they don't actually want to know. So, I mean, if they're volunteering, I'm assuming that they really do care.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's one of the biggest things.
Krista, I really appreciate you sharing your story, and I'm so very sorry to hear about your losses and how difficult it was for you as a young person, but I appreciate that perspective. And let's get one more here in this conversation as we look at drug abuse prevention and education. For one thing, Beth posted, one of the most important components of school-based prevention is the education of staff, from administrators to teachers to bus drivers, so they can be resources to their students. My organization, Franklin County Caring Communities, works with our schools as well as families and municipalities to promote prevention strategies and empower youth as leaders in prevention. And on the line with us now is Lori Augustiniak, coordinator of Prevention Works Vermont, a network of the 23 community coalitions in the state working on substance abuse prevention. Lori, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
We've looked at a few programs and talked with people around the state who are doing various things. How do they fit with what you're seeing statewide in terms of an approach?
Statewide, we're seeing a lot of similar things happening in communities that have the resources and capacity to do it. But that's one of the issues that we're facing right now, is how to bring those projects and policy changes and prevention strategies to scale so that all Vermonters and all Vermont youth have equal access to the same opportunities, because the landscape across Vermont really varies.
One of the differences, I would think, between drug abuse prevention in the past and the substance abuse that we're trying to combat today is this question of opioids and how people are first introduced to them. You know, you can't just say don't use opiates or opioids in the way that perhaps an approach in the past would have been don't use marijuana, don't try cocaine, if what you might be finding out is that you're going to get your first opioid from a doctor. How does that change the way we talk about it?
Well, you know, I know this program is focused on opioids, but it's also important to recognize that alcohol is still by far a more dangerous drug for youth. Mm-hmm. And we can't lose sight of that even when other drugs are taking over the headlines. But that being said, when we're talking about prescription drug misuse and opioid use disorder, we've only begun to really research what works in that realm of prevention. So until we know more about the specifics, if there are any specific special things we should be doing differently around this particular drug, we're being advised by the experts in the prevention world to rely on our experience working with other substances, because if we can prevent lower severity substance use disorder, which includes alcohol and marijuana, will help prevent opioid use disorder. And the vast majority of people with opioid use disorder have had trouble previously with other substances. So, you know, the conversation is broadened now because we're talking about heroin and opioids, and it will keep changing as new drugs emerge, and that's kind of what's happened. But we stay the course with the prevention strategies that we know work. And the good news is that substance use disorder is preventable, and there's been lots of research that has provided strong scientific evidence that prevention does work.
You know, we know in Vermont, though, that we have a high rate of marijuana use among young people. We have a high rate of alcohol use. So does that suggest that our education isn't working very well, or we're not doing the right things?
It suggests that we're not doing enough of the right things consistently. So one of the problems has been funding, and the state has been really fortunate to have federal grants that have helped funded our efforts, but when those federal grants go away, we don't have the funding, and so efforts that got started don't get finished or they don't get continued over the long haul. So one of the really important things when we're talking about prevention is this is a long-term strategy. When you look at tobacco control, it took generations for us to see changes in cigarette and smoking rates. And so this is a long-term strategy, and we need a sustained commitment over a long period of time in order to do that. So part of the problem has been just funding and the resources to keep at it dedicated, like we did with tobacco. And with tobacco control, we had the Master Settlement Agreement money from the tobacco industry that allowed us that luxury of having funding and resources to stay at it for a long time.
So you're hoping that more resources will help lead to better rates in terms of lower use of these substances.
Absolutely. And we have evidence of that already in Vermont that would we have seen that when we've had dedicated funding for alcohol, tobacco, and other drug prevention, the data is showing significant reductions in substance use behaviors in Vermont, and that's comparing communities that had funding opposed to communities that didn't. And we know that because the Department of Health does a really terrific job of evaluating all of those efforts and monitoring what's going on with the Youth Risk Behavior Survey and what's happening in communities and schools. And so they're able to see that there are these changes that are happening when there is distinct funding provided for substance use prevention.
We just have a couple seconds, but have you had luck then getting the legislature and the governor to come on board and give more funding to communities that don't necessarily have it?
Well, we're working on it. And the other good news is that both the Opioid Coordination Council and the Marijuana Advisory Commission have both identified that prevention programming is really necessary, and we need to look at how do we do this in a better way in Vermont so that it is more equitable and all Vermonters have equal access to the best prevention programming available.
That's Lori Augustiniak, coordinator of Prevention Works Vermont. It's a network of 23 community coalitions around the state working on substance abuse prevention. Lori, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, you're welcome, Jane, and thanks for inviting me.